Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, September 17th. 47 days until Election Day. Voting, of course, is underway already in many states. Battles are continuing in court and in the political sphere over attempts to expand the opportunity to vote versus attempts to limit it. Here's a new one today that you might not know about yet. This is USA Today, headline, Trump appointees torpedo report on threats to minority voting rights during the pandemic. That's the headline, and it starts like this. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights spent months analyzing threats to minority voting rights during the coronavirus pandemic, coming up with what one commissioner called a behemoth set of recommendations. But no one will see them. Conservative commissioners, that commission is divided 4-4, so they can kill it, Democratic and Republican appointees. Conservative commissioners, it says, recently appointed by President Donald Trump, voted to shelve the report, its findings and recommendations, even commissioners' statements. The commissioners who led the research provided a glimpse of the report's contents during an August meeting, noting it covers problems with in-person and mail-in balloting faced by voters of color, people with disabilities, and those with medical conditions that make them vulnerable to the virus. The full report, including what commission staff said should be done to overcome those obstacles, is not for public consumption, the commission said in a statement provided to USA Today. So with that as backdrop, Donald Trump and Joe Biden each held minority-focused voter events, campaign events this week, specifically Latino-focused campaign events. Trump at what he called a Latinos for Trump event in Arizona, Joe Biden in an appearance in Kissimmee, Florida. Despite Trump making a centerpiece of his administration cracking down on Latin American immigration, and despite his behavior after Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, a new NBC News Marist poll shows Trump a few points ahead of Biden among Latinos in Florida. The Pew analysis, looking back at the 2016 election, showed Clinton got 62% of the Latino vote statewide, with Trump winning among Cuban Americans and Clinton winning among all other groups, but total 62% for Clinton. Trump leads slightly among all Latinos right now, according to this NBC News Marist poll. Cubans and Puerto Ricans, by the way, are the largest Latino populations in the state, but it's also very diverse. After criticizing Trump for his immigration, hurricane relief, and coronavirus policies as they impact Latinos at the Florida event this week, Biden weighed in on the eternal question of Puerto Rico's status.
I happen to believe statehood would be the most effective means of ensuring that residents of Puerto Rico are treated equally, with equal representation at a federal level. But the people of Puerto Rico must decide, and the United States federal government must respect and act on that decision.
So that was about Puerto Rico's status. Biden also linked the issues of Obamacare and Trump's pandemic response.
We'll work to build on Obamacare and expand its protections so the more Hispanic people have access to high-quality, affordable health care that they deserve. Under the Obama-Biden administration, 4 million Hispanic Americans gained coverage, the largest gain of coverage of any group. But President Trump is still trying to rip Obamacare away from people in the middle of the worst pandemic in a century.
So that was practically the only thing in the speech that Biden said he would do. Much more of it was about stopping things that Trump has done. But what's gone viral online is when Biden was introduced by singer-songwriter and actor Luis Fonsi to Fonsi's 2017 reggaeton hit, Despacito.
All right. There you go. Dance a little bit, Joe. Come on.
I tell you what, if I had the talent of any one of these people, I'd be elected president by acclamation. Thank you so much.
By any of these people, he meant Fonsi and Eva Longoria, who also introduced him, and Ricky Martin, who was there to support him as well. So Joe Biden being introduced with Despacito for, I imagine, the first time, and maybe it's the first time, too, that it's the lead-in to our guest for this segment, Julio Ricardo Varela, co-host with Maria Hinojosa of the podcast In the Thick and founder of the website Latino Rebels. Julio, thanks for coming on with us today. Welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, I think it's the first time I've been introduced to Despacito, Brian.
For the record. did that moment go viral because it was cute or cringeworthy, or what was that?
Yes to all, I guess. I mean, I went on Twitter and said I'm not going to do Despacito hot takes. So, I feel there are bigger issues regarding the community that need to be addressed, because what it actually fascinated me about that moment is that the Trump campaign, particularly with the Latino community, has actually been doing a very effective job in messaging for the voters that it wants to get. And, you know, they're very responsive to, like, Biden. And I hate to say it, but they're also very almost culturally relevant. So there's a team, I know some people in that campaign working out of Florida who have been constantly sharing things in response to what Biden is doing. And, you know, in the end, Trump really doesn't have to win the Latino vote. He just has to neutralize it, right? So yeah. That, to me, is the bigger issue here is it's a question of, like, what is Biden doing? But the notion that Trump, in the middle of a pandemic that has disproportionately impacted the Latino community, is still polling nationally in the low 20s. In Florida, I would say more in the 40s. I'm kind of skeptical about that Marist poll because it was only 137 likely voters. So I feel like it's one of those examples of taking something that says Trump is winning by 4 points and not really looking at the data, but it becomes, you know, news, right? Mm-hmm. And when you have people that aren't covering the community daily, they see the headlines, but they don't realize that that poll did look at it about 100. It was a subgroup poll, about 138 likely voters, and the margin of error was probably like, I think it was like 8% or something. So we have to be really careful. But I do think that the Trump campaign is actually doing a very effective job in reaching out to the voters that it needs to reach out in the Latino community, like conservative evangelicals, people who are coming from places where they feel that socialism had ruined their countries. It's quite effective. And especially in Florida, when you have Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, of course, Cubans, and even Puerto Ricans who might align ideologically with Trump, he could still get 35-40% of the Florida vote. Probably, you know, that's where I think. But I also think my final button on this, I don't think Biden has to win Florida to win the election. So that's why you see his campaign going to places like Michigan or Pennsylvania, where there are significant Latino populations that aren't really been courted in the past. Yet the Biden campaign has been criticized by a lot of insiders, a lot of Democratic operatives for not really outreaching. They've been seen as being a little bit too late to the game. So there's a lot I shared with you, Brian. So please, like, let's go anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, you answered my first 4 questions. So I'm going to go home now and go to my next segment. No, I played the clip of Biden endorsing Puerto Rican statehood if statehood were to win in a vote on the island. Does that issue move any votes in Florida or anywhere, in your opinion?
Great question. First of all, I'm going to be I already knew that Biden had that position because we had published a Biden delegate from Puerto Rico who wrote an opinion piece about a month ago for Latino Rebels where Biden told him a personal story about why he personally supported statehood. So I guess, you know, being a Puerto Rican journalist, I'm like, yeah, I already knew that, but I understand that the national audience might have not have understood it. But one of the things that I'm hearing about that specific comment, having covered island politics, having covered the diaspora for years, is that he's still kind of speaking from two sides of the mouth. So it's not a clear, he's like, he's personally supporting statehood, but you do not hear the candidate say, we will enact legislation if this plebiscite that comes out in November chooses statehood, even though it's not binding. He basically kind of made reference to a self-determination binding vote that, to be honest with you, Puerto Ricans have been hearing for years out of Washington. So I don't know if it will move needles. That's what I mean, I did a Twitter thread while everyone else was talking about Despacito. I actually looked at the policy that came out on Tuesday. I actually read his positions, and talking to a lot of Puerto Ricans in Florida, because my family's down there. So I know the community down there. There were still questions about, why didn't you speak out against voting for PROMESA under the Barack Obama, Joe Biden administration? Why are you talking about auditing the debt when there's a movement to cancel the debt? Why are you not talking about, why can't you say the word colonialism? You know, things like that might have got people excited. I think there's two other things here, Brian, about just Puerto Ricans in general. I think people are tired. Puerto Ricans are tired of the paper towels motif by Trump. Everyone knows, Puerto Ricans know that Trump has not treated Puerto Rico well.
Paper towels, just for people who don't know, that refers to when Trump was there after Hurricane Maria, he maybe thought he was doing something nice for people. He threw out rolls of paper towels, but of course it was so patronizing and demeaning.
Right. I think Puerto Rican voters in Central Florida, at least the ones that I talk to, Democrats, know that Trump has done, he's not for anything, I think, Puerto Rico, right? But he still appeals to those conservative, free market, evangelical Puerto Rican voters, and there are plenty of them in Central Florida, that are kind of like, Biden has done nothing for Puerto Rico in 47 years. I'll give you one specific example that I think you're going to love. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who is a conservative commentator, Peter Bavaldi, out there, and he live streamed a boat caravan of Puerto Ricans on a lake in the Orlando area this week. Sort of a, you know, like they did the one in Austin. There was a boat caravan in Orlando. What you see with Puerto Rican voters who are Trump supporters, they're very excited for Trump. What you see, I think, with Puerto Rican voters who are Democratic supporters who are voting for Biden, of which there are more, is that it's very pragmatic. It's like, we have to get Trump out. I think if the Biden campaign went in Tuesday and just gave a little bit more, there would be a little bit more excitement.
My guest, if you're just joining us, Julio Ricardo Vadea, co-host with Maria Hinojosa of the podcast In the Thick and founder of the website Latino Rebels, and Wendy in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Wendy. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show. I also love Latino Rebels and In the Thick. I think that they give really important voice to the diversity of the Latinx voices within the United States, and I really appreciate this segment. I think that Biden and Harris are really wasting an opportunity to build Latino support within the Democratic Party. I just feel invisible within the way that the campaign is sort of performing its outreach. And I think that Biden is just not exciting younger Latino voters. I think about my goddaughter, who's a college student. She's 20 years old, and she's totally not excited about voting for him or for Harris. So what are they doing to outreach to this younger generation? I think that they're not taking enough advantage of the Latinx elected officials that we currently do have, such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Richie Torres from the Bronx, or any number of people nationally that could speak to the diversity of our community. Our community, I think, is being taken for granted. And then when they do focus on the Latinx community, it's often based on immigration or refugee issues. We are not encompassed within this idea of who is the working class element or the middle class element or small business owners. And I just think that they are really wasting an opportunity here to build something that can continue to grow the Democratic policy positions in the future.
Julio, you got a fan on the line here. You want to talk to Wendy in the Bronx?
Yeah, first of all, Wendy, thank you for the love and the Futuro Media love. Latino Rebels is part of Futuro Media that Maria created, Maria Hinojosa, and In the Thick. So thank you. But I also want to echo your comment. I've been hearing for months on this election cycle about specifically the Biden campaign. Are they connecting with, you have 32 million eligible Latino voters, right? The second largest voting bloc after the white voting bloc. You know, we can get into issues of the complexities of race and ethnicity. I try to you know, I don't like to say it's non-white because there's plenty of white Latinos in that community.
Right.
But I will say this. We have to realize that the Democratic Party needs to come to terms with the fact that that voting bloc is younger, is more politically engaged, is more progressive, is not turned off by the word socialism. So they're challenging sort of, I think, the conventional Democratic thinking of what the Latino base was previously. So there's a lot of focus on Florida because I think, Brian, I think it's American culture, right? We grew up in the time of Castro, the Cold War, the Cuban exile community. It's become, I think, part of American political lore, right? But we're forgetting about Arizona. We're forgetting about Nevada. We're forgetting about Pennsylvania, where there's a significant Puerto Rican community. And there are organizers in Pennsylvania who are like, they're not reaching out to us and they're not reaching out to young people. So what I'm I think Wendy is spot on. I've written things in the past. I wrote this piece for The Atlantic as to what Biden can do to learn from Bernie Sanders when it comes to Latino voters. Bernie Sanders did tap into younger Latino voters. And I think this notion of a pragmatic vote really riles up establishment Democrats. It's kind of like, well, if you don't vote for us, you're voting for Trump. I'm like, no, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Give them something to get excited about. They will show up in November, perhaps in record numbers, if you just acknowledge that. If you just acknowledge that, Brian. And I think Wendy's comment, I've heard it hundreds of times. And the Biden campaign is saying that we are reaching out. But is it too late, is my question.
You know, Wendy brought up, and you brought up, kind of the many things that Latino voters are interested in. And Fox News was making a point the other day of the fact that immigration ranked only 7th on a list in a Pew survey of Latinos nationwide on what issues people rank as very important. And immigration ranked only 7th on that list. Of course, we should say, we shouldn't have to say, but we probably should still say that Puerto Ricans are not immigrants, as I hope everybody else knows by now. But regarding the many Latinos who are, it was still a relatively middling number, 59% saying immigration is a very important issue to them compared to the others above it on the list. I'll just go down this real quick from the Pew survey. Economy, 80% said very important. Next was healthcare, 76% said very important. Coronavirus outbreak, 72%. Then racial and ethnic inequality, 66%. Violent crime, 63%. Supreme Court appointments, 64%. Climate change, 60%. And then immigration at 59%. So, I mean, 59%, you know, it's still important, but it's middling compared to some of those other ones, especially kind of, you know, pocketbook and personal health issues. And so I wonder what you make of that.
I make it's interesting because I do think the Trump economic message, even in the time of coronavirus, disproportionately impacting Latino communities, small business owners, it still has appeal with a very, you know, with a sector of the community. It always is going to have an appeal, and that you can look, you can trace that the origins of that community from Reagan to Bush to Trump, you know, that's always going to be there. And so that doesn't surprise me. But what I think is not happening with the Biden-Harris output is a better understanding on how the pandemic has really just decimated Latino communities all over the country. And I feel that also political media doesn't understand it. And this is where I get on my Futuro Media soapbox. And you know this, Brian, because Maria has said this in the past, is that because political media is so white and affluent and privileged, they're not seeing the connections as to why you see these communities more severely impacted because of the essential workers, because of immigrant communities that are literally keeping us fed and the economy, you know, keeping our economy, you know, at least buzzing. What's missing, I think, with Biden-Harris is sort of this public reckoning of that. And also, I have to say, even though immigration might not be a top issue right now, understanding Trump's policies are impacting the community, it just is really hard. And I know the Biden campaign bristles when I say this, but as a political journalist, I don't think there has been a public reckoning of the Obama deportation strategy, of which Joe Biden is part of the administration. Yes, he apologized in Nevada with Jorge Ramos during the primary and admitted that, you know, things, you know, and he also told Jose Diaz-Balart of NBC News and Telemundo this week in Florida that, you know, not enough was done at the beginning. But I see someone like Julian Castro, who was also part of that administration, admitting that he has evolved and realizing that that was a mistake. I think Biden-Harris, in the end, has to really come to terms and offer this sort of very public moment that just says, yeah, Democrats, we kind of laid the foundation for this Trump policy. And yeah, this is awful. And wow, this is abhorrent. And we see these connections. And that, I think, gets tied to issues of social justice, economic justice. That to me, Brian, is a moment for the campaign, I think, to maybe awaken sort of that realization in the Latino community. And I think that mm-hmm. would also be something that I don't understand. Like, just do it. And because I think people will vote for Biden and Harris and feel like, okay, at least they're listening and we can move on. It's just too easy to just blame everything on Trump.
You know, we have Leela in Miami calling in. Let's see what Leela has to say. Oh, hello great. From New York, Leela. Thanks for calling today.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Julio. So, yes, I am Guatemalan, Mexican, and India from East India. Mm-hmm. And I am in Miami Beach, and I had to deal with the Cubans. But there's some Cubans that are not Republican. But for the most part, they are Republican. And the Nicaraguans, too, because what the Republicans have done for them in the past. But what I find incredible is the men that associate themselves with Trump because of the macho culture. Just like 14% of all Afro-American men, not women, support Trump. It's that macho image, that, you know, successful image. I used to be married to a German. And I remember when I lived in Germany, I talked to a lot of people about the Hitler years. And they told me that the people that wanted to be with Hitler was because they wanted to be in the successful part of the equation. And I think that answers a lot to the male culture, because females, most of the time, and especially in Latin America, we're in charge of two generations, the older generation and the younger generation. We don't have time to start looking at cojones, our balls. We're looking at our table without food, a roof that we might not keep. And this is where this is the huge disconnect. And Biden is not getting it. And Kamala Harris is not getting it. And Julio is 100% right. 2004, it's like, you know, over a decade ago almost. They have to do something. They really have to talk to at least to the women and talk to them about healthcare, about education. Education is a huge thing for Latin Americans. You know, that's how, you know, you get to the next step. And remember, UNICEF and WHO have done many studies on girls that get educated. Education is a tradition. The mother doesn't have it, the children are not going to get it.
Thank you, Leela. Thank you so much for your call and for chiming in. Julio, we're running out of time. You want to address anything Leela raised?
Yeah. Wow. I'm just blown away by all the three callers. But I will say one thing in defense of what at least the Biden campaign has gone on record saying, that they do have a Cuban strategy, a Mexican strategy, a Puerto Rican strategy, a Venezuelan strategy, and that they do have a database of all these, you know, cell phones, and they can understand if Perez from Mexico, he's from Mexico as opposed to Perez from Cuba. But I do think it does speak to a deeper issue of understanding the complexity of the Latino community in 2020. And I do feel that Democrats still are, they did not learn from Obama in 2008 and 2012, where he did pretty well with Latinos. And I fear that a lot of the mistakes of 2016, Brian, are still happening now.
And there we leave it for today with Julio Ricardo Varea from the podcast In the Thick, which he co-hosts with Maria Hinojosa and founder of Latino Rebels, where you can read him. Now, I didn't know you have a Washington Post op-ed coming out. You mentioned it in passing. You want to shout out what it's going
to
be?
I sent it out to my editor yesterday. They liked it. They wanted me to look at like the reasons why Biden might not be doing as well with Latinos in Florida. They like the draft, so if it's out in the next couple of days, it will. But if not, I did write a piece for The Atlantic about Biden and Bernie Sanders that people can just Google. It happened a couple of weeks ago and kind of looks at some of the things that I talked about today.
All right. For those of you who didn't know Julio before, when you see that op-ed in the Washington Post, you can go, oh, that guy. So that guy, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure with you, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.